$5 Bin Podcast with Mark and Rick.
And now with a splash of Brian.
Hello, Cinemaniacs, and welcome to the $5 Bin Podcast. This is one of our mini episodes. 4 episodes to go, not including this one. With me are my co-hosts, Rick Maxian.
Hello.
Hello, and Brian Higgins.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
Yes. Well, there's much cause for celebration. Our local New England Patriots are once again Super Bowl champions. We are recording this the day after the big 6-ring win.
The big game.
The big game.
Big game.
Yeah.
It's the big game that I have to say, for the first time in the last 18 years, I have not needed some kind of like heart medicine after the game.
Oh, it was like, why you said you didn't need aspirin, because I was like, how did you know you might be hungover tomorrow already?
No, not aspirin. Not for that. It was basically every single game. What did they won
always
or
down
lost?
To the wire, yeah.
Yeah, they won or lost by less than a touchdown, right? Every single time.
Yes,
this time
true.
Was much easier on my
much
heart.
Much mellower.
It was a real nail biter there.
Yeah. Obviously, the Super Bowl is a sporting
event. The big game.
The big game. A sporting event that brings the world together. Much like the music of Bill and Ted in the future. It has the power to unite the world, bring world peace. It contacts alien life forms and lets us communicate with household pets more easier.
Oh.
Because, gentlemen, I don't know if you recalled, I'm sure you did, but Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure was the full reviews that we did just last week. Now, gentlemen, did you kind of have any follow-up thoughts? Because actually, there's a number of things we need to address that came out of that episode that we should
Gettysburg
revisit.
Address.
Yeah, well, that was spoken by Honest Abe.
Not really. I did actually watch the second one.
Yeah, well, that's
so
the,
we gotta
that's
cover
one of the
that.
Things I was going to ask you guys, because I said, if you have time and you can watch Bogus Journey, let's do it. And I believe all three of us did
we
do
did.
That.
So it's going to be like a mini reviews it.
It's a mini reviews it, yeah.
We're
so,
giving you an extra episode.
Yeah, bonus time, folks.
So you want to jump right into Bogus Journey, or do you want to rehash a little fun facts?
Let's do
about
fun facts.
Well, we got to do, there's a lot of fun facts about
Right,
let's
do fun facts. Because we don't want to jump and start talking about the sequel until we kind of fully covered the original. So, in the original script, the time machine was going to be a 1969 Chevy van. But the filmmakers thought it would be too much of a ripoff
of
Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So they changed it to a phone booth, apparently unconcerned that Doctor Who uses a police telephone box as its time machine. And when they used the van, Bill and Ted picked up more historical figures than they did in the final film because they had more room.
Oh.
So that was actually one of the things I wanted to look up, was that that came on the full reviews, at the question of if the phone booth was inspired by Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But apparently they just did not think about it whatsoever, nor cared. So I think that answers that question.
Yeah.
The phone booth time machine used in the film was given away as a contest prize in Nintendo Power magazine, as the magazine was promoting a then-new Bill and Ted game for the NES. We talked about that as well, how I had that NES game, which was awesome. You had to go around and, you know, help out historical figures. And for years, Keanu Reeves lamented that his epitaph would read, "Here lies Keanu Reeves, he played Ted."
Okay.
Because obviously he went on to bigger and better things after this.
Speed.
But here,
Speed.
And that was
Point
one of the things.
Break.
Well, that's one of the things in the second one. Point Break was released 1 week prior to.
That's
oh,
crazy.
He's competing with himself.
Yeah. So that was a crazy month for him.
And but if you're a Keanu-yak.
Is that a word?
Yes,
a Keanu-yak. When Bill reads the assignment to Ted, the history assignment, he says, quote, "Express to the class how an important historical figure from each of your time periods would view the world of San Dimas 1988. His lips are actually saying San Dimas 1987. The 1988 was dubbed later because of the delay in the movie's release.
Oh.
So he's saying 1 year, but he's it's coming out as something different.
They really should have just said what historical figures would think of San Dimas today.
Today, yeah. Why even say the year?
Because you're instantly dating yourself.
Yeah. Originally, the plot was going to have Bill and Ted visit and therefore accidentally cause all of history's greatest tragedies. The sinking of the Titanic, the crash of the Hindenburg,
that's a much
the Black
better movie.
Plague, etc.
Like, it's a dark movie.
Yeah.
But like that concept
that
really is intriguing to me.
Amazing.
But it would have to, as we've seen in this movie, there's no time effect of them like going back in time, and there's no cause and effect, so why would the bad things exist if
because they went back in time?
Yeah, but it kind of ignores any cause and effect of them going back and playing.
But it would change the whole movie.
Yeah,
the movie isn't the same.
Well, yeah, it would be a different movie.
Yeah, it'd be a different movie. So, like, the way that they travel through time in this one would be completely different.
Here's a little Easter egg, or just foreshadowing. All of the figures that Bill and Ted pick up through history are on the blackboard at the opening classrooms.
Yeah, I picked up on that.
Oh.
So they're all listed there. Bill and Ted began as a stand-up act in which the characters would discuss current events without knowing what they were talking about. Originally, there was a third character named Bob, but the comedian who played him lost interest after a few performances.
Oh.
Now, was
who was
Keanu
that?
And Alex playing them? Or
I don't know.
That's interesting.
That's weird. Because
that's weird.
Who was playing him? Because
I'd like to think it was
Bob Odenkirk.
Michael J. Fox.
No. Another Back to the Future
thing. Crispin Glover.
Oh, boy. Patrick Swayze. That was just going off Point Break.
I just looked up a little more history.
Oh, about Bob?
About Bob.
Bob Capelthwaite?
So the fact that they called it stand-up is a bit of a misnomer.
Okay.
Because the idea came about in 1983 when Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson formed a student improv workshop with a few of their peers.
Oh.
And they decided to do a couple of guys who knew nothing about history talking about history. That comes from a 1991 interview with Cinema Fantastique.
Ooh. And then going off of that, so the screenwriters Ed Solomon and Chris Matheson, who created the characters, discovered Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves when they were messing around outside of a McDonald's in front of them. Two kids messing around?
Alex Winter and...
And Keanu.
Keanu
so they
Reeves.
Were apparently friends
yeah, but Keanu
prior
Reeves,
to the movie.
Keanu Reeves has been acting since
yeah,
like the
mid-'80s.
Yeah,
he did like the River's Edge and stuff like that. Yeah, that's weird. Also with
maybe he had
Crispin
no money?
Glover.
Oh, God.
He's in that movie. Alex Winter had commented in an interview that the casting of George Carlin was a very happy accident. They were going for more serious people first, like Sean Connery. The movie just kind of all turned out to be a happy accident because no one ever thought that the movie would see the light of day.
Oh, but it did see the light of day. It saw the light of many days.
Originally, Alex Winter auditioned for the role of Ted, and Keanu Reeves auditioned for the role of Bill.
That would have been a very similar movie.
I was just going to say, I think it would have just changed the
name. It would have just swapped the names. Eddie Van Halen said that he would have been glad to appear in the movie, but no one asked him.
That's too bad.
No one asked you, Van Halen.
No one wants you, Eddie.
The German dub has gained cult status in Germany and is credited for coining the words Hashi and Granatenstark, which served as the substitutes for dude and excellent, respectively. Also, the quote, be excellent to each other, has been replaced with a more philosophical line, which translates into colorful and excellent is the being.
That's silly.
That doesn't work for me.
The Ziggy Pig dish is an ice cream restaurant, is a reference to a comic book character put out by Timely Comics, later Marvel, during World War II. By the time this movie was made, it and its image, which appears on the badge they place on Napoleon, were public domain. The award itself is based on the ribbon that could be won at a Farrell's ice cream parlor restaurant upon completion of the Pig Trough, a double-sized banana split. Farrell's was a very large restaurant chain in the 70s, but few remained by 1988. There's the history of the Ziggy Piggy.
Ziggy Piggy.
There's a similar eating challenge at Disney where they have the kitchen sink.
Oh, I gotcha, yeah.
I think I saw that on like Man versus...
I don't think you get a medal.
There was like a Man versus Food one where you went to an ice cream place and
like
it was like a
places.
Kitchen sink. And it was like
well, because it's like all the flavors
cream.
And all the different toppings.
So obviously in this movie, they used the word dude and excellent a lot. Can you guess how many times they used each of those words?
Five?
That is way low.
I'm going to say...
One is dude and one is excellent.
Dude, I'm going to say 48 and excellent, I'm going to say 59.
What do you
got? I'm sticking with five.
Five for both?
Yes.
Okay. They say dude 70 times.
Oh, man, I was way off.
And they say excellent 30 times.
I won on the Price is Right rules for the second
one. Excellent would be so much more because they keep using the be excellent
to
each other.
Yeah, they do, but I think all their speech is just peppered with dude. Do this, dude, and then do that, dude. So in an interview, the screenwriter said that the characters of Bill and Ted were originally envisioned as 14-year-old skinny guys with lowrider bell bottoms and heavy metal t-shirts, who were despised by the popular kids at school. However, after casting Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter, it changed the filmmakers' images of the character because they said, once you cast Alex and Keanu, who look like pretty cool guys, that was hard to believe.
All right, I'll give them that.
That speaks a little bit about, we had asked during the full episode about, like, what kind of clique that these characters were in, so... They originally seemed like they envisioned them as, like, the kids that got bullied, and they were kind of like, you know.
But then it changed to.
It changed to, like, everyone liked them type of guys, like we said. Yep. Like, the party, the fun guys. Oh, this is interesting.
I'll be the judge of
that. Most of the historical figures that Bill and Ted brought back all died horrifically. Several of the characters, Socrates, or Socrates, Joan of Arc, Billy the Kid, and Abraham Lincoln were all executed or assassinated. Sigmund Freud died by assisted suicide. And Napoleon's death was in house arrest and sometimes been believed to be the result of arsenic poisoning. Ooh. Genghis Khan and Beethoven, however, are generally held to have died completely natural deaths. So all the other ones were pretty...
So maybe Bill and Ted did cause maybe they did. Some horrific events.
Yeah. Oh, this is something you guys brought up. Rufus never introduces himself to Bill or Ted.
Yeah, Bill and Ted introduced themselves
to... Future Bill and Ted introduced themselves at the Circle K. The original outline of the movie, Rufus was supposed to be a 28-year-old high school sophomore who befriended Bill and Ted. There was also a character named John the Serf, whom Bill and Ted picked up in medieval England.
I could see that, because then they'd be like, oh, you're a serf? We love to surf, dude.
And we had brought up how it was kind of weird during when they first picked up Napoleon, how they used that stock footage.
Right.
It was from the movie War and Peace from 1956.
That was definitely not HD.
According to Alex Winter, he and Keanu nicknamed the phone booth the Death Box because filming in it was so unpleasant.
Is not a real fun fact.
This is one of four productions in which Genghis Khan and Abraham Lincoln appear together as characters, in spite of the fact that Lincoln was born 508 years later.
I'm going to get one.
After Khan's death.
I'm going to get one. Night at the Museum.
Battle of the Smithsonian.
Yep.
The Savage Curtain from 1969 and Clone High from 2002.
I don't know Clone High. I got one. I win.
No points.
I got
something. Oh, this is one of the things we brought up. So that, like, that jock, whose name is Ox, who's given the speech about computers.
San Dimas High School football rules.
The punk band the Ataris wrote a song based on his report. The song is titled San Dimas High School Football Rules, but has nothing to do with the film. When Bill and Ted get Beethoven, the film shows they are in Kassel, Germany in 1810. At that time, Kassel was the seat of court of Jerome Bonaparte, the younger brother of Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, Jerry Bonaparte.
Jerry Bonaparte.
You almost use that as like a verb. You're like, when Bill and Ted get Beethoven.
They get Beethoven.
I was like,
that's
what
actually
going to
be the name
about?
Of the third one. Bill and Ted get Beethoven.
But it's a big dog.
Yeah. Yes. In the original script, Babe Ruth was going to be a character.
Oh.
The bar fight scene in the saloon is a parallel to the Girl Scout fight in Airplane from 1980. Both begin over a poker cheat, have the same punches and bar stool hits, and end with one being slid across the bar until breaking through a wall or jukebox.
Maybe that was stock footage, too. Yeah.
That makes sense, though, that he gets thrown through a wall 2 feet to the right.
Yeah, I know, right. The film was originally going to end with Bill and Ted taking the princesses to the prom. A photo on a British VHS cover from 1997 suggests this scene was filmed, but it was deleted. So it was a deleted scene. Steve Jackson Games released Bill and Ted's excellent board game in 2016, based on the movie.
When was it released?
2016.
That's quite the gap.
Well, you know, they do a lot of those nostalgia, like all the Monopolies when they go back and be like...
Or like the Legend of the Hidden Temple
game. Yeah, right, yeah. Or, you know, Oregon Trail. Pauly Shore auditioned for the role of Ted.
That would have been...
I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm glad about that one.
Including Bill and Ted, there are 10 people in the phone booth in the end. The world record for a crowd inside a regular-sized phone booth is 25 male students set in Durban, South Africa in 1959. I think we can beat it, guys. We'd have to find a phone booth.
Good luck.
When Bill and Ted leave Napoleon with Deacon, there's a balloon in the background that says, "Party on, dude."
Oh.
Party on, Wayne.
In the scene where Bill, Ted, and Billy the Kid escape from the Wild West Saloon, and they're running into the phone booth, a cowboy can be seen in the background carrying a sack and moonwalking.
Oh, he. I wonder if he went on to become a.
He might have become
a sentry in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Alex Winter, Keanu Reeves, George Carlin, Hal Landon Jr., who plays his dad, Amy Stock, who plays Missy, and J. Patrick McNamara, who plays Bill's dad, are the only actors to reprise their roles in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Sean Penn and River Phoenix auditioned for the role of Bill. Phoenix would later go on to appear with Reeves a year later in the releases of I Love You to Death in 1990 and My Own Private Idaho in 1991.
I feel like Sean Penn would have been too big for this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Too dark, too.
1990-ish?
Well, but, you know, they wanted him off of Fast Times,
yeah,
you know?
So that makes me wonder if he...
He would have been too old.
If he auditioned or was asked to audition.
Yep.
It comes across as the type of thing, like, they're trying to get funding, so they're like, oh, we're talking to Sean Penn.
Yeah.
About being
to get to get it going.
Because then the executives go,
that,
oh, yeah,
that
like,
makes sense.
Like Spicoli. Oh, okay, I can see it now.
When Bill and Ted are leaving Napoleon and Ted's younger brother Deacon's care, you can see an electronic football game in the background. Assuming Ted grew up playing the game, it explains why Bill and Ted are so good at it and can best the Grim Reaper when they play it in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Ah.
And from that, let's move on to talk about a little bit about Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. So this movie came out 2 years later.
Yeah, 1991.
Obviously, it was a very different tone from the first one.
It's a weird movie.
It's weird. Rick, why don't you speed read the plot?
So the music of Bill and Ted's band, the Wild Stallions, has created a utopian future society. Chuck DeNomulus, who detests this society, steals one of the time-traveling phone booths and sends two robots, who are modeled after Bill and Ted, back to the late 20th century to prevent Bill and Ted from winning the San Dimas Battle of the Bands. Rufus attempts to stop DeNomulus, but seemingly becomes lost in the circuits of time. I mean, I'll keep going, but there's two things. One of it is, steals one of the time-traveling phone booths. I think there's only, like...
But it looks updated because there's not an antenna anymore, so I feel like they've improved the model.
Why would they steal that one? If there's others, why wouldn't they just go try to find something else? I think there's only probably the one phone booth because of the way they are so cavalier with the timeline. They're like, I'll just jump back in this phone booth and do this and do this and send it here and do this. And it's like, it's one booth, but it keeps going.
So real quick in that opening scene, in the world of the future, it was very different from the first movie because everyone was wearing these super colorful outfits that were really
huge
outfits.
Yeah, it was weird.
Just foam cutouts.
And the cutouts were awful. I mean, it was like someone grabbed a knife that was not sharp enough.
It wasn't even an X-Acto knife.
No, it was
an obtuso knife.
Someone was like, hey, I've got a memory foam 1-inch thing on my mattress. Let me cut this up and make it.
Production design, not the strength of this movie.
No.
And Rufus brings back some other historical figures, Edison, Bach, and James Martin from Faith No More.
Yeah.
And then next week he goes, we'll have Ben and Aretha Franklin, they're a couple.
Which is also awkward, by the way, when he says, next week we'll have Ben Franklin, because they run into Ben Franklin later in the movie. In the present, 2 years after Bill and Ted first traveled through time, Wild Stallions is preparing for the contest. Though Bill and Ted's current fiancés and former 15th century princesses, Elizabeth and Joanna, have become skilled musicians, Bill and Ted are still inept. Despite this, the organizer, Miss Woodrow, assures them a slot in the contest as the final act. Bill's stepmother Missy divorces his father in favor of Ted's, who threatens Ted with military school should they fall in the Battle of the Bands. Evil Bill and Evil Ted arrive, and the robots eventually replace Bill and Ted by killing them, throwing them two off the side of a cliff. The robots behave rudely to the princesses and work to ruin the duo's fame.
Yeah, robots behave worse than rudely.
Yes.
They're kind of attempted rapists.
No, and they're just all around assholes.
Yeah. I did like the line when the evil robots say, come with us, and Bill and Ted go, because the previous are we met ourselves and we went on an excellent adventure, and they were walking around we're about to embark on an unprecedented expedition.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that could be the title of a third one. Bill and Ted's Unprecedented Expedition.
So now Bill and Ted's souls are met by Death, who challenges them to a game for their souls. Bill and Ted escape after giving Death a Melvin,
which is basically a wedgie,
and they attempt to alert their families, but their ethereal forms prove difficult and are eventually cast down into hell at a seance held by Missy. In hell, they are tormented by Satan, made to face their own fears, and realize their only escape is to take death's game offer.
Their own living hells were the military school general, an evil Easter bunny, and Grandma S. Preston Esquire.
Who was also Bill.
Yeah, she was played by Alex
Winter. Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
She, Alex Winter in costume.
That's funny.
So then they go to Death's Chambers, and the spirit gives them the option of what game to play.
I love this part.
Bill and Ted, to Death's dismay, select modern games like Battleship, Clue, and Twister.
And the electronic football one that we just mentioned. And Death kept going like, 2 out of 3?
Yeah, they easily beat Death.
4 out of 7?
Yes, they easily beat Death. And he's like, no, we must play again. Death.
See, this is the part of the movie, I don't remember if I ever saw the movie.
Yeah, well, this
but
is where
But this is the concept that I recall.
Yes.
I remember
And it was
this.
Just a quick montage.
So I remember this part of the movie, but I was saying, when I don't remember most of this movie.
Because a lot of stuff happens.
It's a lot of stuff. And so when I'm seeing this and I'm like, wait, I remember, for some reason, I remember them playing Battleship.
Yeah. Again, that's like my favorite scene of this movie.
I also
that's
feel like
so
that
funny.
Was a scene that they pulled
played
out and played on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's probably why. But I mean, like, it's one of those things where I like, oh, I feel like I've seen this movie, but yet didn't. They easily beat Death. Death admits defeat and unwillingly becomes their servant. Bill and Ted recognize they need to locate the smartest person in the universe to help build robots to counter Dr. Nomalus's evil robots. Death escorts the two to heaven, and with God's help, are directed to an alien named Station.
Station!
Who readily offers to help Bill and Ted. Now, Death brings them back to the mortal world, where it is the night of the Battle of the Bands. Bill and Ted take Station to a hardware store and race their van back to the concert, while Station constructs good robots. Just as the evil robots take the stage, Bill and Ted arrive, and Station's robots easily defeat the evil ones. Denomalus appears in the time booth, ready to defeat Bill and Ted himself, and overrides the broadcasting equipment to send the video footage to everyone on the planet, and also translate, if you guys remember that part.
What?
They show Russia, and there's literally translations going on at the bottom of the screen.
Oh, really?
So when he's giving his speech, there's already, like, closed captioning.
Future technology.
Yeah, he's very good at this. The two recognize they can later go back in time to arrange events for Denomalus to be trapped in the present. Aided by Death and Station, through Denomalus is apparently able to do the same. And Bill and Ted gain the upper hand with the explanation that it is only the winners who get to go back. And Denomalus is arrested by Ted's father. Ms. Rodro reveals herself to be Rufus! And having assured Bill and Ted's spot in the concert, he urges them to play. As Bill and Ted reunite with their fiancés, they realize they are still terrible musicians. And the four use the time booth, though they return immediately, and say, an intense 16 months of guitar training, plus a 2-week honeymoon, have passed for them. They begin to perform a stunning rock ballad, joined by Death, Station, and the Good Robots. Their worldwide broadcast, set by Denomalus, continues, and the Wild Stallion's music is played across the globe, creating harmony. Over the credits, shown through newspaper articles that the band, along with Death, go through many perks of fame before eventually taking their act to Mars. End of movie.
The end.
Yeah, those newspapers at the end, they are something.
They're pretty funny.
Because if you pause and you look at the actual newspapers, the articles have nothing to do with the headlines. Like, other articles on the page that have nothing to do, that are just, you know, contradicting, like, world peace achieved. Then it's like, people killed.
So let's recap really quick all those plot points that happened. So, evil robots kill Bill and Ted. They die. They're ghosts. They're possessing things. They get zapped down to hell.
Yep.
Then they play the Grim Reaper. He becomes their friend. They break into heaven. They find Martians. They become alive again.
Yep.
The Martians help them build good robots.
Yep.
That then kill the evil robots.
Instantly.
Instantly. Then they fight
one
the big
punch,
bad.
Which, here's the issue I have with this. In the beginning part of this movie, or midway through, I should say, the robots are playing basketball in the apartment and take their heads off. Yet at the end of the movie, they get their heads knocked off, and that destroys them.
But then their bodies explode, too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's totally different. It's just a weird...
So then they win the day, and they become musicians. So, again, a lot of stuff happens in this movie. A few of the points I do just want to point out that are some of my favorite scenes in this. So I really like when they're ghosts, they are trying to convince people what happened, so they possess Ted's dad and one of the other cops. And I thought the dad did a really good impression, so here's a really quick clip of Ted's dad being Ted Theodore Logan.
Fellow policeman, my son, Ted Theodore Logan, and his friend, Bill S. Preston Esquire, have been murdered and replaced by evil robots from the future.
You totally did it, dude. I totally possessed my dad.
Okay. You gotta go over and arrest these robots so they don't ruin everything for me and Bill. My son and Bill. And most importantly, they don't hurt the babes. The princess. This isn't working. Well, back me up, dude. You got it, dude.
I totally believe you, dude.
Yeah.
Whoa, donuts.
Whoa, excellent.
I like that when he's possessing the dad and they do their air guitar that he's then like playing like Spanish guitar. It's like slightly different. Yeah.
The dad does a good job there. The other guy does
not. The guy who tries to attempt Quaid and Total Recall. That's all.
I mean, one of the things that I do have a big problem with in this movie it's just the visual effects.
The effects,
They are.
I was going to ask Rick what he thought of heaven.
When they're trying to make it look like they're dead, so they just like put a blue filter over the lens.
Yeah.
But then anytime they resort to CG,
So I'm going to say yes for 95% of the movie. In the opening scene, when they're in the future.
Booth?
And all
when they
the
show
students,
the robots?
And no, when all the students put their glasses on and have the booth come down, there's CG in the top of it, and it's very pristine and almost perfect on the effect. I was like, and so I first watched it, and I'll have to show it to you guys again, but it's like when I first watched it, I was like, they just blew their budget on this because it was that good for 1991. So I was like, oh, my God, they blew their budget. And then the rest of the movie went to show how poor the rest of it was, where you had people's suits cut out of memory foam mattresses and costumes that were just awful costumes.
Yeah, right.
And then other effects
that were ridiculous. No,
the thing that I think they blew the budget on was when the bad robots first show up, and they reveal that the robots by pulling back the faces via the mouth.
It's like a rubber remove.
No, that's the same scene.
Yeah,
I think they blew everything in that scene.
The rubber face effect there looks really good.
Yeah. What do you think when they revealed their chests? Did you like that?
It looked less good.
Yeah. It was not as good.
So I liked that scene with the possession because it was just a good impression. I also, like I said, when they play death for all the games, all the board games, that's really fun. I really like William Sadler as the Grim Reaper.
His weird German voice. Yeah,
he was
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah.
He was good.
And I do like when they announce the band at the end, too. Because it's like, along the way, they've picked up all these sidekicks and they've created this, like, this ragtag group to join their band. So that's kind of fun. So, like I said, it takes a different tone, but I do enjoy the movie. I mean, I think it's fun.
It's not as good
as the first one. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. So let's think back about the original, since we said it was much better. So it's time where we connect the last reviews that we did, which was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time, again, a time travel connection, to this Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Now, I actually have numerous connections.
Oh, good.
I did not think of it
because I was watching Bogus Journey.
Let me start with this one. So Corey Feldman, this is kind of like a reverse one that we've had before. Corey Feldman, who was Donatello, was in Goonies with Ann Ramsey. And then Ann Ramsey was in Scrooge with Tony Steedman, who plays Socrates.
Very interesting.
Elias Koteas, who plays Casey Jones, was in the movie Fallen with Denzel. Now, Denzel Washington was in Much Ado About Nothing with Keanu.
Oh.
I did not know that.
Paige Turco, who played April O'Neil, was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 with Vanilla Ice.
Mm-hmm.
Vanilla Ice was in That's My Boy with Adam Sandler.
Oh, my.
Adam Sandler was in Grown Ups or like a bunch of straight to Netflix movies with Chris Rock. And then Chris Rock is in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka with Bernie Casey, the teacher.
Oh.
Also a fun fact, Vanilla Ice has a song in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, the newer one. So Vanilla Ice has two different connections to turtle movies.
Oh.
And then also, kind of taking the same route, Paige Turco to Vanilla Ice again in TMNT 2, to Adam Sandler, That's My Boy, to Chris Rock in Grown Ups, and then Chris Rock to George Carlin in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Ah, there you go.
So and Dogma.
And Dogma.
Yes.
There we go. Fun connections or a cool connection.
There are connections.
Remember there was a restaurant, there was an ice cream place called Cool Connection by us? Just made me think of that.
Cool. I remember Caldor.
Baskin Robbins became Cool Connection.
I remember TCBY.
Yeah.
I have another connection.
Oh, what do you
What
got,
is
Brad?
That?
Character actor John Aylward was in Armageddon with Ben Affleck.
Okay.
Who was in Dogma and...
Oh, right.
Jane's Bob.
Yeah, there you go.
With George Carlin.
There you go. All right. We brought this up a little bit during the full reviews, but have you been able to find any further research about this potential third movie?
So they have posted on the IMDb page for Bill and Ted Face the Music that William Sadler will be in the third movie.
But that does not necessarily confirm anything.
No, it doesn't. Yeah,
it just means because someone might have put him on there.
It's all pre-production right now.
And is that title like cemented that that's what they're going with? Yeah.
Not that I know of.
Well, I thought we were going to be able to maybe find some more research with our crack team, but since not much is going on.
Hey, you're lucky you got us to watch Bogus
Journey.
That's
true. Perhaps, maybe, Brian, you could give us a little bit of research about some other things that came out of the full reviews. Is there any way you can find us the plot description of that Brady Bunch episode with Jesse James?
Oh!
No boo! I don't want to listen to this.
No boo.
This episode is called Bobby's Hero, and the basic plot summary is Bobby becomes obsessed with Jesse James. Mike and Carol don't approve of his new hero and try to find a way to convince him that James is nothing but a mean, dirty killer.
And that episode traumatized Rick.
So here is the Brady Bunch Wiki's summary. Mr. Hillary, the principal at the elementary school, requests a meeting with Mike and Carol, who suspect bad news concerning one of the kids. Indeed, Mr. Hillary's concern is a composition Bobby wrote on his hero, Jesse James the Outlaw. In addition, Bobby, pretending to be Jesse James, brought a cap gun to school. After Mike and Carol speak to Bobby about the issue, explaining that they're simply curious to know why Bobby chose Jesse James as a hero, Bobby says that he believes he will grow out of his fascination with Jesse James, but his actions say otherwise. Later, Mike and Carol try to prove their point that Jesse James is not a character to emulate by allowing Bobby to watch a Jesse James movie that they know shows that James was nothing but a mean, dirty killer. However, all the violent parts are edited out, making Jesse look like a cool guy. In turn, Mike and Carol understand why Bobby would idolize someone like Jesse James. After finding and reading an accurate biography on Jesse James, Mike believes that Bobby having a chat with biographer Jethro Collins, a relative of one of James's victims, might help. Jethro is friendly but firm, as he tells Bobby about how Jesse James brutally and pointlessly murdered his father in a train robbery.
Holy crap.
Oh, wow, this is his father, and the grief and horror it caused him and his family. Bobby has a nightmare that he's forced to watch as Jesse James murders his entire family in a train robbery. When he wakes, he finally realizes what his parents were telling him, while also seeing Jesse James for what he really was, an outlaw and cold, vicious killer who murdered people.
Yeah, no.
And
I don't like it.
That summary is something, but to actually watch that scene,
I'll see if I can find it.
Oh, I'm pulling it up.
Isn't it great to be going to California?
Yeah, I hear California's really beautiful.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, how long before we get there?
Oh, not long, son. With these new trains, it only takes 18 days to get to California.
And that's all the way from Arizona.
Jesse James.
Jesse James. I never thought I'd get to meet you.
I said hands up. Everybody throw your purses and wallets in the aisle.
That is quite the gun.
as he says so nobody gets shot.
Oh, Dad, he wouldn't shoot anybody. Jesse James is a real great guy. He's my hero. I even wrote a composition about you and how you are such a great hero. Sorry, it only got a C plus.
All right, now everybody, face the window. Your backs to me.
What do you want him to do that for, Jesse?
Why, so I can shoot him, of course.
But this is my family.
That's frightening. That's crazy. Are you okay, Rick?
No.
Are you all right?
No, I hate that. I was only a kid when I watched this. It's
such a weird thing to put in the middle of a Brady Bunch episode.
Oh, it's crazy.
So going off of that, I have brought this up as well. The episode that confused and scarred me a little bit, too, was a episode of Punky Brewster where she fought a fire demon in a cave.
Yes, I remember that one.
It's called The Perils of Punky. And apparently it was a two-parter.
Yes.
Now, let me read this to you. Now, it was for a Halloween episode. That's why they did it. So, Punky and her friends are on a camping trip with Henry and Betty at Lake Waxahachie. And Punky and her friends get lost in the woods while they're collecting wood for a campfire. While Henry and Betty are searching for them, Punky and her friends decide to seek shelter in an old Indian cave, where they sit around a fire as Punky tells a ghost story. The cave proves to be not quite abandoned, and the inhabitants divine that Punky is the successor to Princess Moon, who has been foretold to defeat the evil Awatogo Siam. After Punky and the gang are sent off deeper into the cave, their first look at what the evil spirit can do is horrifying to them. I think she puts all her friends in, like, the cave wall, and just their faces
are sticking out.
In part two, the evil spirit conducts a campaign of fear through giant spiders, disappearing friends, and other things. Soon only Punky is left. All the others have vanished. The spirits attack. But Princess Moon, played by Soleil Moontry in a dual role, appears and reveals that it only affects those who fear it. Punky forces him to feel the positive emotions of the world, and the spirit dies, bringing everyone back from vanishment. Betty and Henry find Punky and the gang sitting around the fire. Punky winds up her story, and they head back to the camp with Henry and Betty, but not before one last goodbye from Princess Moon.
Do you think that's how Avengers Endgame will
end? I think so. I wonder if they got the name Princess Moon because she's Soleil Moonfry.
Almost definitely.
That was just a weird
episode.
Did you
say that, like, the demon's name was Owatagos I Am?
Yeah.
Like, oh, what a ghost I am?
Oh, wow. Holy crap.
No, wow, I didn't catch that.
Wow, that's pretty good.
No, that episode is another one that scarred me as a child.
It was very strange.
I've never seen that one, so I never got scarred from that
one. The thing with that one
maybe
was,
we can find it.
I mean, Punky Brewster had a lot of scarring episodes.
It did, but it was all based in reality all the time.
Like when Cherry Johnson gets stuck in the fridge.
Yeah.
But when Henry's photography store burned down.
Right.
That one in particular, because you'd be watching it would be in syndication, it would be like the afternoons or whatever, and that episode would just come out of nowhere, and it wasn't always back-to-back episodes, so you would just see the first half.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like, well, what?
Or you'd be just turning on and Punky would be fighting a fire demon.
With giant spiders.
What?
The giant spiders are the things I always remembered.
All right, gentlemen, I think we have maybe just a bit of time to jump into a little... oh, where have these actors gone? Oh, where could they be?
Probably not famous anymore.
Now, a lot of the actors we're probably going to look up, or most of the historical figures.
Most of them are going to be dead.
But we could also look up maybe Missy. Who's got someone for me?
Keanu Reeves.
No, not Keanu.
I can start
not
with
even Alex. We kind of talked about him.
Amy Stoke. I'm not sure
how
to pronounce
her name. Okay, is that
Missy? That was Missy.
All right. I mean, Mom.
She's still acting. Current role is on TV, Mr. Student Body President.
Never heard of it.
And then besides that, let's see, her last one, 2010, she was in a movie called Amber Rose, The Strip in 2009, The Perfect Nanny in 2000.
These all sound like Lifetime movies.
Yeah.
They probably are.
So, she hasn't really acted too much. So she had a child in, I think, 2004. Ish or something, and so it looks like she took
a big
long break. She was in Murder, She Wrote for an episode. Gunsmoke, One Man's Justice. It's a TV movie.
Wow.
Gunsmoke, The Long Ride, another TV movie.
Was she the same character?
Yes, okay. Beth Reardon. But then in Gunsmoke to the Last Man, she was Beth Dillon.
Oh, she must have married Marshall Dillon.
No, she was Reardon in the other one.
Oh, maybe she's Marshall Dillon's daughter and then
married Marshall Reardon. She played in an episode of Matlock.
Oh, Murder, She Wrote, and Matlock.
And then, getting around on Gunsmoke. In Gunsmoke, The Last Apache, she was Beth Yardner.
Well, she keeps having a different name every time.
She's like Missy.
Lifespans were short.
She keeps marrying other people.
Yeah. She keeps marrying. She's like, can I keep this character trait for my more famous movie series?
Yes. She was on the TV series Dallas.
Oh.
16 episodes.
JR? All right. Moving on.
So,
who you got?
Terry Camilleri was Napoleon.
Ah.
And looking through his filmography, his most notable films are where he plays some kind of man. So, in Superman 3, he's a delivery man.
Oh.
Outside of Napoleon, of course. The Truman Show, he's a man in bathtub. He was on the show Pacific Blue.
I wonder if he was wearing his Napoleon, like, onesie thing.
Maybe. In Pacific Blue, he was a hot dog man. In The Invisibles with Portia de Rossi, he was Le Pizza Guy.
Le Pizza Man.
Mrs. Ellen DeGeneres, right?
And yep. Yes, yes. And, of course, in Geely, he was Man in Dryer.
Wow.
He has quite a few credits. He has 65 acting credits, a couple upcoming projects.
All right, moving on. Does anyone have Billy the Kid?
That is Dan Shore.
Are you sure about that?
I am.
Ah.
So just going off the top known for, Tron.
Oh. Guys are hard to see when they're in computer programs.
He's like, he's the red racer.
So in Tron, he was Ram/popcorn coworker.
Okay.
He also is Art Collins in The Boy Who Drank Too Much in
1980. Oh, that sounds like a PSA.
I think that was starring Scott Baio, though.
Whoa. So
Scott Baio is probably the titular boy. Let's see.
He's Charles
what
in charge
else
of that
was
beer.
Billy the Kid up to? Cagney and Lacey, Murder, She Wrote. I think Murder, She Wrote is going to be quite popular.
Yeah.
One episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Nice.
One episode of Star Trek Voyager, same character, or at least same last name.
Oh.
He was in Air Force One.
Get off my plane.
He was on Bull and Blue Bloods.
Oh, those are current shows.
He has one upcoming project in something called Dream Years.
Cool.
Good for him.
All right.
47 acting
So you're
credits.
Saying he's now Billy the Man.
Oh, well, if he was, then he would be played by Napoleon.
That's true. Yeah, the guy that plays Sigmund Freud.
So Sigmund Freud is Rod Loomis.
Rod Loomis. And he held a rod inside the mall. Oh, it was a corn dog.
Yes. He was on an episode of Seventh Heaven.
Oh.
An episode of Quantum Leap.
Nice.
An episode of
Another
Jake and the
travel.
Fat Man.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
One episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Whoa.
Oh, Star Trek.
So far, Murder, She Wrote and Star Trek.
The Beastmaster.
But it's pretty much all you could do in like the 80s and 90s.
Not a lot of acting credits. Only 28 titles.
Yeah. How about the guy who played Abraham Lincoln? I know we looked up that he's played Abe Lincoln a few times.
Hey, Lincoln.
But has he had any non-Abe roles?
So he did pass away in 2000 at the age of 67.
He was young.
His final acting credit was in 1994, where he played a homeless man in A Dangerous Place.
Hmm.
He did some voice work on Power Rangers. He was
Power
on
Power Rangers
Leap.
Meet Abe Lincoln.
He Quantum was Zordon.
Quantum Leap.
Frankenstein, The College Years, he played Professor Leipzig. Again, he was on Get a Life as Abe Lincoln.
Hey, Blinken.
Hey, Blinken. Did you say, hey, Blinken?
On L.A. Law, he was Leonard and a wino in different episodes.
Oh.
Out of This World, Abe Lincoln, as we mentioned. He was in Daddy's Boys as Axelrod.
Oh, Rod. There's a Rod connection.
Rod Belding. Twilight of the Cockroaches, he was Elder.
That's weird.
Night Court, two episodes. This is his most noteworthy
of course.
Role.
Yeah.
He was also on the Wild Wild West.
Wow.
Oh, with
movie?
Will Smith?
The TV show.
Oh. Not that the movie was any better.
I
think, in all honesty, I think Genghis Khan's the one with the most impressive
All right,
filmography.
Let's end on Genghis Khan. Who is Genghis Khan?
That's Al Leong.
I've seen him before.
Yeah, I've seen him
his
too.
His top four are
was
Bill
he
and Ted.
In, Big Trouble?
He was.
I thought so.
He was in Die Hard.
Oh.
He was in Lethal Weapon.
Those are a lot of
movies we've covered.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was in The Scorpion King.
Wait, The Scorpion King with The Rock?
Yeah, with The Rock.
Yep.
Yeah.
Daddy Tell Me a Story.
That sounds weird.
That 70s show.
Okay.
Godzilla 98.
The Matthew Broderick one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh.
The Replacement Killers.
Was he the same character?
I don't know.
Oh.
Escape from L.A.
Okay.
Double Dragon.
Oh, nice.
The Shadow.
Oh.
See, that's where I recognized him.
Beverly Hills Cop 3. Hot Shots Part 2.
Oh, man.
This guy's in everything.
This guy's like my favorite actor now.
And he likes Twinkies.
They Live.
Oh, with Roddy.
MacGyver. The A-Team. Five Ooh. Episodes.
Holy cow.
Different character each time. Not only is he in Big Trouble in Little China, he's also in 1986's Big Trouble.
Oh.
As a Chinese laborer.
Wow. That one wasn't in China, though.
T.J. Hooker. Two episodes. Twilight Zone.
Nice.
The 1980s version.
No.
Not the new one coming out.
With Jordan Peele.
With Jordan Peele.
Or the original. Magnum P.I., Greatest American Hero, Heart to Heart. He was in Twilight Zone, the movie. Oh, he directed Daddy Tell Me a Story and wrote it, too.
Whoa! All right, gentlemen. Well, I think that kind of wraps up where have these actors gone. All right, gentlemen. Well, I think it's time for us to stack rank the movie.
Yes.
Stack rank.
Let's do it. So,
I enjoyed the movie.
I enjoyed the movie, too. I'd be interested we want to start to compare this to.
I would say if we start smack dab in the middle, so we're at 75 right now. So if we go to like 37.
Okay.
Cop and a half.
I say better.
Okay.
Better than Cop and a Half.
Okay. Heavyweights?
Better.
All right. Batteries Not Included.
Better.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Better.
Face Off.
I'd say
going.
Better.
Keep going.
Yeah, I'd say better.
Mortal Kombat.
Better.
Yeah. Top Gun.
Top Gun, yeah. This is better.
All right. Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep going.
The Great Outdoors.
Keep going.
Okay.
Adventures in Babysitting.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Sister Act.
Keep going.
Three Amigos.
Keep going.
I don't know if I'd keep going at Three Amigos.
I would, yeah.
All
keep
right.
going.
Midnight Run.
Yep.
I do like Midnight Run, but keep going.
Top Secret.
Keep going.
TMNT 2.
Keep going.
Keep going.
Gremlins.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Gremlins 2.
Let's note the spot.
Cool Runnings.
Ooh.
I'm curious what's next, though.
Independence Day.
Oh.
Then Lethal Weapon.
I definitely like it more than Lethal Weapon, but I like the other two
What's
more.
What's the next one?
Trading Places. Scrooged.
Hmm.
Karate Kid.
Ooh, that's
Batman
dicey.
Returns. Rookie of the Year.
This
Planes,
was,
Trains, and Automobiles.
This was hard
I think we're in the realm where
we're
it's
not,
not
going
competing.
Past Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's what I mean. I'm surprised we went past a lot of these, but.
Go back down.
We'll go back to 15, Karate Kid.
I think Karate Kid's a better movie.
What was after Karate Kid?
Higher numbers, Batman Returns. Lower numbers, Scrooged.
What number is Batman Returns?
14.
What's 15?
Karate Kid.
What's 16?
Scrooged.
17.
Trading Places.
18.
Lethal Weapon.
19.
ID4.
20.
Cool Runnings.
21.
Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
I'd be willing to place it at 21. Like above the Gremlins movies.
Above the Gremlins movies? Yeah.
But below Cool Runnings.
Below Cool Runnings.
I said kind of note that spot too
yeah.
while we were going up.
At
so.
22, Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
All right, so 21 is Bill and Ted. Excellent.
And their excellent adventure. So,
where would you rank Bogus Journey since we did a kind of a mini
much
one?
Much lower. If actually, yeah, we can rank it.
We can rank
we can
it.
Rank
we
it.
All
we
watched it.
We kind of did a mini reviews it.
Yeah, so 60 is Batman Forever.
Better than Batman Forever.
All right, let's go to 50, Spawn.
It's better than Spawn, I think.
Okay, yeah, I'd say better.
All right, 40 is Kingpin. I'm going up by 10s, by the way.
Kingpin's better.
Kingpin's better?
Yeah.
It's 45.
45 is Dark Crystal.
Ooh.
What's 46?
Major League.
Oh, Major League is definitely better.
Yeah, keep going
How's
down.
How's Major League that much lower?
Keep going down. Well,
Jingle All the Way.
Oh, it's definitely not as good as Jingle All the Way.
What's next?
Wizard.
I would put it above Wizard.
The Wizard.
Yeah, I'd put him around the same place. That's fine.
All right, 48. It's going to take over
or actually,
48.
Maybe after Wizard.
Yeah, what's right after the Wizard?
Time Cop.
I think it deserves to be right before Time Cop.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree. So the Wizard.
Wizard, Bogus Journey.
49.
Wow.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's all the time we have for this mini-episode, which is drastically becoming much longer.
A maxi-episode.
Any kind of final thoughts on any of the Bills and Teds?
before we go?
No, it's streaming, I think, on Hulu and on Amazon
Both of them
Prime.
Are.
It's a fun movie.
Check it out.
Check it out.
I think there's so much they could have done with the premise. Like, when I was watching Bogus Journey, it made me realize what I wanted to see from a Bill and Ted movie was like, do you remember the original trailers for Lilo and Stitch, like the teaser trailers?
No.
Where they had Stitch, like, appearing in the other Disney movies.
Oh.
Like, it was the Lion King scene, yeah, like, at the beginning, and instead of it being Simba, it was Stitch, and then they were like, get your own movie.
Yeah.
And, like, he was on the ceiling in Beauty and the Beast. I kind of wanted to see Bill and Ted go into other movies.
Oh.
Like, I think that would be an interesting
twist. Well, maybe that will be for the third one.
And I know with their Halloween Horror Nights thing, they did have a lot of pop culture references. But I think that would have been a good way to do, like, the next in the series. Use them as kind of characters to weave things together.
Yeah.
I think it would have been fun.
Well, maybe that's for Face the
Maybe
Music.
Maybe they'll hire me, and I'll write that movie.
Yeah. That sounds great.
All right, you're hired, Brian. And now I think we should all go watch Daddy Tell Me a Story.
Daddy.
And on that note, thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this mini episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. I'm Mark, and for Rick and Brian, just remember, you can always paint the grass green. 4 episodes to go.
Do, 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 do.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Bobby, son, coming to the den.
Yeah, Dad?
Well, you know here in this household that me and your mother have to look over all schoolwork assignments, and we've already been over the time you wrote about Jesse James and how traumatizing that was for the whole family, but you've really taken it to another level this time. Like, I mean, who's the subject of this one?
Porn actress Jesse Jane.
Peter, get in here. Peter, come
yes.
on in here.
Hello?
Are you familiar with this actress that your brother is talking about?
No.
Why don't you tell us a little about your report there, Bobby?
Well, let me tell you about a dream I had last night,
okay.
Dad.
Okay, all right. You go ahead.
All of you were there.
Really? Well, I like when the family does things together.
Dude, what are you doing? Don't tell your parents about that dream. I'm Ted Theodore Logan.
And I'm Bill S. Preston. In training to become an esquire.
How did we get here out of the TARDIS?
I know, we were just on the planet Gallifrey, dude. And now we're like totally in like a American sitcom. Who are you?
I'm Peter, and I'm not sure how you got into my house.
Well, your new name's Bob, and you're an unwritten third character.
Oh.
Get in the phone booth. Hit it, Ted.
Boop, beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop.
Whoa!
Whoa!
Where are we? Oh my god, Ted! We are in a mystic cave with Punky Brewster!
I hope that Princess Moon will save us.
From that ghost that- what was the ghost's name again?
Oh, what a ghost I am.
Oh! Plop plop fizz fizz! Oh, what a ghost he is!
That's how we'll save the day!
Whoa! Get in the phone booth, Punky!
Punky, where are you going?
Get in too, Henry Warnemont, aka the dude from Police Academy.
You better not burn down my photography store.
Woof, woof.
Beep. Oh, it's Brandon.
It's Brandon the Wonder Dog.
Get in too, Brandon.
Beep, boop, bop, boop, bop, boop. Ted, where are we heading? I don't even remember anymore. What's our final destination?
It's something called Daddy Tell Me a Story.
Oh, all right, I think we're here.
Hello.
Hi, Daddy.
Oh, my children, let me tell you a story about a castle named...
Mom.
Missy, Bob, that's not part of my story. My story was about a dog named Brandon.
Oh,
we've got one of those, dude.
What? I need to finish my story.
Go ahead.
This is the plot of a movie I'll never see.
But it's gonna rank better than Waterworld.
Aren't you glad you stuck around for part two of this unprecedented exposition?
Name subject to change.
To be concluded.
Thanks, Cinemaniacs, for listening to this mini-episode of the $5 Bin Podcast. And join us for our next full movie reviews it. 4 episodes to go. You can find us on the social interwebs. Tweet us at the number 5, Dollar Bin, P-O-D, like us on Facebook, or email us at the $5bin.podcast@gmail.com. Download and subscribe to all our episodes on iTunes, and when you do, hey, why not leave a nice rating and review? Helps others to find the podcast as well. Wah, thank ya! For information about Brian and my improv organization, Natick Improv, and upcoming workshops and performances, you can visit natickimprov.com or like Natick Improv on Facebook. A big thanks once again to Jenny Weech and Jeff Kimball for the $5 Bin theme song. And until next time, Cinemaniacs, hasta la vista, baby station.